Bears a Microsoft Office 365 MVP who knows practically everything there is about Office 365. He does stand-up events talking about Office 365. He writes about Office 365 on his blog site, and he does in-person training sessions and training videos about Office 365. There's also me, Mark Keane. I'm the voiceover guy and producer of this podcast. I'm also a Microsoft Azure MVP and a Microsoft Azure architect, helping people move to Microsoft Azure and consume it by helping them to make sense of it. This is a Need to Know podcast with Robert Crane and Mark Keane.
Contact us by email.
Feedback@needtoknow.cloud. It's your destination for anything Microsoft Cloud, including Azure and Office 365. And
Office 365. And Office 365.
We're back for another Need to Know podcast. My name is Robert Crane, and on the other side of the microphone, joining me is my co-host once again, Mark Keane. Mark, welcome.
G'day, how are you?
Not too bad. What's happening today?
Oh, look, it's episode 127. We are speeding through the episodes like there's no tomorrow.
Well, there will be tomorrow generally, so it's good. We've got lots of guests coming on. We've got lots of information about Microsoft Ignite, as well as plenty of other great technical information. So I think the ones we've had so far have been good. The ones the ones we've recorded that are coming out, people should listen to, because I think they're even better. So, sorry, what were you saying?
I was just going to say, what else have we got too? We've got some sort of awesome promotion happening as well.
Oh, have we got promotions? Have we got promotions? Like I said, so we're giving people basically $700 off the standard entry price into Microsoft Ignite Australia in February on the Gold Coast. Basically, you need to follow the N2K podcast Twitter account and also retweet one of these podcasts to get that, and then we will see that and send you a code. I think we've already given away a couple of codes, haven't we, Mark?
We have on Twitter, because so as Rob was saying, follow the N2K podcast Twitter account, which is us, and retweet the tweet which talks about the $700 discount off the cost of the Ignite ticket.
Exactly. So I think it's good value, and I think hopefully we've been able to demonstrate that by the people who have come on and indicated the reason that you would attend their session plus all the other sessions. So again, more evidence coming along, but again, we always appreciate people following, tweeting our information, and if you want doing so, we'll give you $700 off the standard entry price.
Yeah, it's going to cost us a lot of money. Heaps, but you know what? We're prepared to do it. No, I'm just kidding. We worked it out. It's all good. It's a good promotion, and it's all legit. So limited numbers available. So definitely take us up on the offer, and we'll basically come back with a code. So did you want to kick off this morning?
Yep. Let me have a look here on my notes, because we've swapped across here while we were waiting, and I can bring that up. Hopefully not to.
Or do you want me to kick off?
No. You can just sit there and twiddle your thumbs for a minute while I get my stuff together here. So one of the things I've seen that's been going on recently is that Microsoft is bringing more and more features and functionality into Flow. So it's obviously creating more services, connections. It's also now providing connections back to on-premises environments. So since one of the things Microsoft's doing is putting more focus, more energy into the Flow side of the business, probably not quite as slick yet as something like If This Then That or Zapier, but I think in the long run it's certainly going to get there, and it's a great way of automating processes. So one of the processes that I've automated using Flow recently, did a blog post on it, was normally when you sign up for a webinar, you get an immediate confirmation via email that you've signed up and you've got details. That isn't available with Skype for Business out of the box, because Skype for Business is more, enterprise focused rather than seminar based. But I've managed to automate that process where someone signs up using Typeform, and it will send them, email them the details immediately. So it was pretty easy, pretty straightforward. I'm pretty impressed with what it could do. So again, look out for those updates that are becoming available with Flow. So what about you, Mark? What's new?
Well, yes, Azure Analysis Services has just been made available in Southeast Asia and East US too. So last year in October, which is 2016, it was only last month, it was last year. So Azure released a preview of Azure Analysis Services, which is built on the proven analytics engine of Microsoft SQL Server Analysis Services. So with Azure Analysis Services, you can host semantic data models in the cloud. Users in your organization can then connect to the data models using tools like Excel, Power BI, and many others to create reports and perform ad hoc data analysis. So, yes, our Southeast Asia and East US 2 are the two new regions. It means now that analysis services is now available in these regions. So Southeast Asia, North Europe, West US, South Central US, East US 2, and West Central US. And for more information, we'll put a link on my blog site and we'll put the link to that in the podcast show notes.
Cool. All right. Well, some other news or potential news or rumors, if you want to call it, that are floating around. Microsoft apparently are working on a tool which they're calling Project Osaka. So the idea seems to be it's some sort of lists or tables sort of tool that apparently is in private test already with a number of people. So it seems to me that it might have something to do with the Staff Hub, which obviously came out recently. Also, Microsoft's purchase of Wunderlist for to-do items. So it looks as though it's going to be basically a way for you to build tables, simple tables, and then start sharing them with your organization. So there is a page that you can visit. Obviously, you can't log in there because you haven't been authorized. But for example, if you go to osaka.microsoft.com at this stage, basically you'll get a welcome to Project Osaka preview. And then again, there's the option there to get started, but you'll need a approved ID. So I'm interested to see what this is all about. It would seem to be another step to adding another collaborative tool, basically like Staff Hub and bookings into Office 365. So interesting little development. We'll see what happens with that.
God, there's so much things coming out like this that there's heaps. There's the groups, there's the teams, there's heaps of them coming out that it's bringing out. It's hard to keep up. That's what I'm feeling anyway. It's hard to keep up with working out what's what and what's the best one to use for what and so forth.
Well, I think part of the criticism that Microsoft is currently fielding and probably is a little bit deserved is the fact that lots of new products, but not a huge amount of integration. So, for example, Staff Hub allows you to create rosters and things. Now, what I found when I played with it, for example, is if you set up a roster, add people to the roster, it doesn't automatically, for example, add that roster into their personal calendar. Now, that may change, that may be on the roadmap, but little things like that, again, just make it feel like a whole lot of products that are sort of, you know, together rather than a fully integrated suite. So I think that a lot of people are beginning now to sort of say, well, hang on, you know, things are coming a bit too quick and quick and fast at the moment. Can we have some more time on the integration? So better integration with things like Planner, better integration with things like Staff Hub. And I think they are coming, but it just makes it that little bit more difficult when it's sort of all not rolled in and the calendar doesn't connect to Staff Hub, doesn't connect to Planner. But yes, if you look at it, the amount of features and products and additions they are adding to the Office 365 product and Azure as well is phenomenal.
Yeah, you're right. And also, too, not only that, is when they do release new products and services, that Microsoft being Microsoft, and look, I'm not having a go at Microsoft. I think it's fantastic what they're doing. It's just the fact that when they do release new products and services, it's not 100% fully featured at the word go. There are still like limitations in the product, and then that comes into the product over time as people
I agree with you, but I think that's what I'm saying to you now is I think that lack of integration is beginning to hurt the product. I think it would be better time spent perhaps making sure that that integration is there out of the box and does work, again, rather than just constantly throwing new products in there for the sake of doing that. I think it's getting to the point where there are enough services in there to attract people, and the important thing is to integrate them together rather than being a whole lot of standalone products and services that at some point in time will integrate together. Because as we know, users will start using them in one way, and then when the new feature becomes available, they won't be aware of it, and again, they will be frustrated. So again, I think part of it is that, yeah, I hear what you say, but I'm beginning to see a lot of people sort of mentioning out there that integration is caused, or lack of integration is causing them issues and frustration. So I'd like, I suppose, as a wish, to see them maybe spend a bit more time making sure all this stuff is a little bit tighter.
Okay, so I'm going to move on with my next news item. Now, Rob, do you remember about a year ago, or actually, you know, last year in 2016, remember we talked about on this podcast the thing about how Microsoft's going to do underwater data centers?
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, following up on the project known as Project Natick, Microsoft has applied for a patent titled Artificial Reef Data Center. The intent is to combine cost-efficient data centers with artificial reefs built around them that'll help promote marine life and create safe ecosystems in oceans, rivers, and lakes. So according to the patent application, Microsoft's scheme is to create submerged data centers that'll also operate as sanctuaries for undersea life. The lead author of the patent application is Ben Cutler, who is the leader of Project Natick. Despite the fact that the patent does not go into great detail, the patent images speak for themselves. If you have a look, we'll put the link in the show notes for the photos and things. It's quite amazing what they've got so far. So they use submerged data centers. Microsoft expects to offer shelter to organic river and lake marine life, while at the same time providing edge speeds to large city areas situated close to the sea. So we thought, Rob, when that came out, that news item was announced, or at the beginning last year, we thought it was possibly not true. But by the sounds of it, Rob, they are really taking it seriously, and you never know. In the future, we could have it come true with real underwater data centers.
Well, again, I think that if you look at the amount of space that's covered by ocean in the world, it makes a lot of sense. And really, probably a lot of people don't want to see a data center. It does take huge amounts of space. And again, putting them under the water and maybe using them for cooling is a good idea, but obviously logistically it would be a major challenge. But again, there should be no limitations if you just look at it pragmatically, that putting something underwater would work quite well. But we'll see. I mean, we could end up with oceans and oceans of underwater data centers, and again, I suppose if it gives us more trees and Johnny Polar Bear ends up being protected, it's probably not a bad thing.
Yes, and other things. Now, this is sort of stamping into your territory a little bit too, but Microsoft Cloud gets Pentagon's top security rating. So the Pentagon has given the highest security rating for unclassified data to Microsoft's federal cloud offerings, Azure Government and Defense Department specific iteration of Office 365. The Microsoft services were granted level 5 provisional authority. Amazing. That's great. Good news for Microsoft.
Well, again, I was going to say the security side of it is so important. So again, I think this is a real good thing. Sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, like, me being a Azure architect and consultant, I meet with a lot of people, and when I talk to them, there's always somebody in the room, Rob, you're probably familiar with this, he says, well, hang on, oh, no one could trust the cloud. It's like, yeah, why would you want to trust Microsoft for in the cloud? Well, you know what, this is just one extra ammunition that you have to give back at them to say, hey, you know what, Pentagon trusts Microsoft. And so it's getting to the stage where those one person's in the room who do have a whinge about the cloud and the security, I think is going to be less and less, even more so now.
Well, I think I'm certainly seeing that the acceptance of it, the understanding of the investment that Microsoft's making, their ability through things like Secure Score and those sort of things to have a look at your security of your tenant and also look how to improve it. Things like multi-factor authentication, Azure Information Protection, which we've had people speaking on the podcast about. So again, it's very hard to do those in a smaller environment, so it makes a lot of sense to do that. So I think, again, it is a positive. You still do see those sort of people, but when you compare apples to apples, I think this is the way it's going, because it's the only way that you can protect IT environments to the level they need to be protected, to spread those costs across many, many users. So makes a lot of sense. And like I said, it's just another tick in the box and an extra piece of ammunition that you can use when people do raise those sort of emotional objections.
Yeah, you're right. Like, Microsoft have definitely, to their defense, have released all of these features and values of the of the service, and it's definitely at the stage where, really, like, if you use the service properly, then it can be so secure. And a good one, which is been around for quite some time, and I'll mention it again, is the good old multi-factor authentication. I think that there in itself is the probably the most basic and the most effective security mechanism I could find when it comes to logging into your data or getting access to your data in the cloud, because then you don't have to worry about your password. And with multi-factor authentication, with my password, I don't need to use a super complex password anymore, because you know why? No one's going to take my password and my phone.
Well, I think that, again, the whole idea is to make it more difficult. The more security factors that you have in there, the more difficult it becomes, the less likely it is. It doesn't eliminate it, obviously, but the idea here is to make it difficult for someone to take those credentials. The more credentials or the more ways of authenticating, the better. But, again, a lot of it is down to having good passwords. So that's always the good way to think about it. To start off with, look at a passphrase, then a password. And if we could solve that, and I think it's challenging for users because, you know, think how many services they use, how many different passwords, how do they remember them all, how do they make sure they're complex, how to make sure they're unique. Mm-hmm. So again, it's a problem that does need addressing or solving, and I think, again, Microsoft's doing that. I think that, you know, one of the things that really impressed me is the Windows Hello. So imagine if you could get the Windows Hello integration where it could recognize you by looking at you and then log you into your PC, log you into your Office 365, that sort of thing, I think would solve a hell of a lot of problems. So hopefully we are moving in that direction.
Yeah, look, Windows Hello is great. I use it all the time and it works quite well.
Exactly.
And it's funny because you see other people like at work who are sort of like looking at it in a weird way, and then they put their thumb up like, yeah, man, like this. Yeah, it's like, they didn't take the photo that way. They're just doing it for play, but anyway, it works. It gets them in. So the other thing I had on my list was the fact that Azure Automation is now available in the UK, so Cardiff and London, and West Central US regions. So Azure Automation allows you to schedule your favorite PowerShell scripts in the cloud with a task scheduler on steroids, basically. You can set up global variable assets on the platform itself, secure credentials, and several runbooks. You can even use Azure Automation to use runbook scripts on premises with the help of OMS, and you install like an agent on the machine, and it kicks off a like a PowerShell script on your on-premises server, which is executed by Azure Automation in the cloud. So previously you had like a handful of regions for Azure Automation, because let's face it, it's just a sorry, I just had to mute and clear my throat. It's just a task schedule, as I said, on steroids in the cloud, and so it doesn't necessarily have to be in a region super close to where you are, as long as it can sort of, you get access to it, and there's enough global scale there in the product, so it won't sort of they can scale it out to meet the demand, which it is, and that's the reason why they've opened two more sort of locations for it around the world. So yeah, Azure Automation, where you can run your PowerShell scripts. Rob, I don't know if you've played with it before, but if you haven't, definitely take a look at it. It's been around for a while, and now you can run native PowerShell in there, so it works quite well, and I use it for my stuff, which I've mentioned before.
All right, well, I think that obviously we need to get into our interview for this episode. So if you've got nothing else, why don't we dive straight into that now?
And who have we got on this episode?
My good friend, Alessandro, a speaker from the upcoming Microsoft Ignite event on the Gold Coast. I'm joined this time by Alessandro Cardoso. Welcome, Alessandro.
Thank you, Robert.
Can you give our listeners a bit of an intro as to who you are, what you do, and maybe, again, what you'll be talking about when it comes to Ignite?
Sure. So I've been in the industry for about 26 plus years, which sounds that I'm pretty old, which is kind of weird. I've been working in many positions by this time, and been working in and lots of industries: education, mining, health, and I do have a lot of experience on these sides. I'm also a former Microsoft MVP. I've been MVP for the past almost 9 years. And then I joined Microsoft last November as an architect for Asia Pacific.
Great. Okay. So at Ignite on the Gold Coast, you've got two sessions here. First one is Managing Red Hat on Azure with OMS. And the second one is Deploying Linux on Microsoft Public and Private Cloud. So maybe if we take the Managing the Red Hat one first, you want to let us know what that sort of session is going to be about?
Sure. Actually, this year, I think my sessions are going to be very interesting, especially because the first one, which is the OMS session, is all about showing how can we leverage Microsoft new management solution into Linux. And what I think that's going to be a really nice about this session, it's because I'm going to show how can someone create a custom monitoring solution for a Linux workload. I did this for a customer last year where he had a special workload. I'm not going to tell here which one. You need to come to the session. But it was very, very interesting because there was not monitoring solution for that particular workload. And I had to step in and write the code in Ruby on Rails. So that's what I'm going to share in this session. Show how can you actually take a solution that was built and customize the solution for your own workload. And it doesn't need to be exactly the workload I'm going to show. It could be anything as long as you know a little bit of what you want to monitor.
Okay, so why don't you give us a bit of a background on exactly what Microsoft Operations Management Suite, or OMS, is? We've got a lot of people out there who probably aren't familiar with the product, or maybe you've heard it but aren't exactly sure exactly what it is. Can you give us a bit of background an idea of what OMS actually is?
So OMS is a new suite from Microsoft. It's a cloud management solution. It will help you manage and protect not only on-prem but as well cloud. And when I say cloud, it could be in reality any cloud out there. You can have your workload sitting on Microsoft Azure or Amazon AWS, or could be a on-prem or third-party data center. You'll be able to manage and monitor those workloads. For example, I remember back old time when I need to do some assessment on my Active Directory. I had to run some tools and, you know, then create and export that and create some report. Now you can go to OMS and it will do on a assessment on your Active Directory or SQL Server, for example, just to take an example. And you create really nice dashboards, and it's live. It shows you, for example, what updates you need to do or what is missing on your Active Directory, what rule is missing, what security policy is missing that it could, if you apply it, will take advantage of that particular workload. It's a really nice solution, and the dashboards are very rich. And if you're not, if there is anything else that you need, you can actually complement, you can actually create your own dashboards.
So I think that what I've looked at OMS in a very basic way is the first thing I would tell a lot of people out there that there is a basic tier, so you can get into it basically at no cost. So you can go to oms.microsoft.com,
yes,
and you can sign up and create a workspace, and then you basically add modules in for the different services you want to connect to, and you put agents on local workstations or on VMs that will then send their information up to OMS. So it is a very, very good platform. It shows that Microsoft is moving in this direction, integrating the tools. But where does it sort of fit in relation to System Center? Is it complementary, or is it going to replace it, or how does it fit in with the System Center world?
Yeah, it's actually a good question. You know, the way I see OMS as a complement for System Center. In reality, it does have a connector to Operations Manager.
Okay, so it's a complementary product that can be used as well as, but OMS is totally cloud-based, isn't it? OMS is totally cloud-based?
Yes. So OMS is definitely cloud-based, so that's what Microsoft wanted in the first stage, was to develop a solution that can be easily deployed by customers. And that's why the good thing is it's just an agent. It can actually even use, if you have System Center Operations Manager, you can actually deploy Operations Manager agent.
Okay. So what about the obviously the focus of this session is on Red Hat Linux, and as we know, Linux hasn't necessarily been something Microsoft has always embraced. They're obviously very keen on doing it now. Is there big demand for this integration with Linux and Red Hat to something like OMS? Is that what's out there in the market? Are you seeing that, you know, basically out in the field?
So what I see today when I go to customers is I do see a lot of customers running both workloads, and customers are looking for solutions that can help them manage and monitor both Windows and Linux solutions. They don't want to go up there and say, oh, I need one solution to manage my Windows workloads and I need another solution to manage. And if you look at what Microsoft is doing not only with OMS, if we look at PowerShell, for example, with PowerShell, I can actually now manage many workloads and many cloud providers. I can actually even manage AWS running PowerShell scripts, which is really nice, and, you know, in Linux as well. This is like, it's moving towards one single solution to manage and monitor. It's giving more power to the end user.
Okay, so turning to the second session here, obviously deploying Linux on the Microsoft public and private cloud. If people attend that session, what's going to be the difference, say, between that session and the previous one on managing Red Hat with OMS? What are the differences between the sessions?
So the other session is all about how can you create your first workload on Azure or Hyper-V, your first Linux workload. How can I actually start working with Linux on Microsoft cloud? And that's what this session is about. It's helping you, guiding you, selecting your template with Linux, guiding you how to deploy, how can you actually do connect, how you enable SSH monitor, how can you play with Linux in the Microsoft environment.
So is that deployment going to be something that's automated and scripted, or we're just going to be doing it through a console or a command line?
So this session is going to be through a console. I'm not going to through automation. There are many scripts that I'm going to point out in this session. But in reality, this session is about how can you deploy this from a Azure perspective as well from Hyper-V, because that's actually really nice. For example, for those who are just using Windows 10, I can actually work with Linux, and that's what I'm gonna show about is, hey, you don't need to deploy a full Linux box. You can, from your Windows 10, you are actually able to deploy a Linux workload, or even if you have a Azure subscription, to deploy that workload in Azure.
So you've got here that the sessions are supporting, obviously, talking about Red Hat and FreeBSD. I know that Microsoft provides the ability to have Linux installed in a VM on Azure in a number of different ways, but what flavors of Linux are the most common? What sort of ones are supported by Microsoft? What are the official ones that Microsoft likes to see on their Azure environment?
That's actually a good question. It really depends on what you're using. For example, if we talk about System Center, we can manage up to 16 flavors of Linux. And if we talk about Azure, we do have Red Hat, SUSE, Ubuntu, CentOS. What else? That's the major one. And it's for us to go and have a look on the other ones. Let me see. Don't know on top of my head. They keep changing this. So that is.
Oh, that's fine.
But what happens with Linux is the major ones, which is Red Hat, SUSE, and we now have FreeBSD as well, which is actually a new addition that will help a lot of customers that place and vendors who work on security to deploy those securities devices and create those as a virtual machine in Azure.
So is most of your role with Microsoft dealing with Linux? Is that the majority of your time, or are you still doing the Windows stuff and the deployment? Or, you know, how does the Linux sort of fit into the role, your day-to-day role?
So my day-to-day role is it still is a pre-sales. So my role is to advise customers on the best solution for them. Is Linux fitting on that? Of course. As it's security, as it's cloud. Those are my roles.
Okay, so I mean, what sort of roles are, you know, the customers out there using Linux for? Are they using it for anything that you see that's common, or is it a case of it's used, you know, in different locations, different workloads all over the place? Is there sort of a common thing that we're seeing when it comes to Linux in the enterprise?
So what I see in the enterprise, I see it being used as a proxy. I see it's been used as a web server. I see it's been used as a database server. It really depends on the type of industry, but many enterprise customers are actually utilizing Linux to host web servers, to host database servers. Like if they have a CMS, for example, they would have that to host, for example, MongoDB. Or I saw some company last year when I was talking to them, they were actually using Squid as a proxy running on Linux. So we still have a lot of companies out there utilizing Linux for, you know, different workloads.
Okay, so what sort of, you know, what sort of people do you want to come to your sessions? What should they, you know, be focused on? Should they be doing Linux? Should they have done OMS? Should they understand Azure? You know, what sort of people are you trying to encourage to come along to your sessions?
Sure. For the Azure session, for the session that we are going to talk about deploying Linux to Azure or Hyper-V, ideally you would have some knowledge on Linux, because what I'm going to do is show how can you leverage that knowledge and deploy that workload on prem or on cloud. That's pretty much the session it's about. The second session, I don't expect you to have a knowledge on OMS. In fact, that's actually the reason. But I do expect you to have some knowledge as well on Linux. And if you know a little bit about developing or coding, that is a plus, because that's how you're going to get the most of it, by understanding how did I customize that coding to create another one for a particular workload. How are you going to take advantage of that?
Okay, so obviously a little bit of knowledge around Azure, maybe some OMS and some coding is probably a positive, obviously, to give you that step up into what you'll be talking about.
Yeah, now, a little bit of coding, that definitely benefits.
Well, that's definitely the way that things are going. We need to have some, everybody, I think all the technical people and IT pros do need to have some coding experience these days. So let's turn just to the Ignite in general. You've obviously attended Ignite a number of times. I believe you've spoken before as well. If someone's out there and they're on the border, they're thinking about, oh, should I go, should I not go, is it worthwhile, why should I go? In your opinion, what's the value of attending something like a Microsoft Ignite event here in Australia?
So what I most likely about going to Ignite is, and number one is to understand what's going on in the market, understanding from a Microsoft perspective, and learn from the experts. We have so many good speakers going to speak at Ignite, and you can't find those in other communities or any other place to hear from them. I think that's a great opportunity. And, you know, talk to them. I think that's a really other, my tip is find them, talk to them, approach them. They are very approachable. If you see them walking around and if you have a question, and put your hand on to ask questions. you know, we learn a lot when we speak, and I do learn a lot with others when I speak, because if people do ask questions, that's why we can help them. So don't be afraid of ask questions. I like when people ask questions.
No, I think that's true. I think that a lot of people sit back and they just think that it's just a pure classroom environment. They're just there to listen. I think that it's always good to bring some questions along, and obviously you need to be respectful of other people's time, but it's worthwhile. It's just getting some clarification around some points. And again, if the speaker doesn't know, I'm sure that they would find out for you or get in touch with you and let you know. So again, it's a whole learning environment, as you've indicated. So what other things, other little tips and tricks can you give people out there? I mean, is it, you know, do you follow one stream? We've had some advice from some people that say if they've got nothing on, they go to a totally random session to learn something different. What's your experience when you've been participating in Ignite? Do you tend to follow down a particular track, or do you mix them up, or what do you try to get out of it yourself when you do attend?
Sure. It actually really depends on, I would say, that is kind of something that I'd say it's personal, but if you take from me, I do intend to go to be generally, so I tend to attend a mix of different sessions, especially because I see that one complement the other. For example, if I go to a data center one, I make sure that I also attend some identity. I also attend some from security, because they complement each other. But some people actually like to be very specialist, and they tend to focus on a special track. My advice, and by my whole experience, I tend to mix. I do this because I understand everything is connected. You can't just know one thing. You need to know a little bit more. You need to step out a little bit out of your comfort zone.
Okay, so again, a good, and it seems to be a general recommendation for a lot of people, is to mix it up. And I think the other key point there, as you say, is a lot of the stuff now is so integrated. I mean, Azure and Office 365 are across so many products and are part of the ability to deploy virtual machines, connect and run software, do logging. OMS, I think, is also now sort of part of Azure as well. So again, there's a big umbrella under which all this falls, and it's certainly not going to help, not going to hurt your prospects of going in and having a bit of an understanding of across this, including some coding, as you've also indicated there. So I think that's sort of really good advice, and seems to be what everybody else or the other speakers are also indicating.
Yes, there are many really good sessions this year. I saw the catalog. Wow, some sessions about not only Linux, but OMS. There are really good sessions on OMS, really good sessions on SQL Server. And if you are a developer, wow, plenty of sessions out there for developers.
So, again, do you think it's a conference more for developers or IT pros, or it's a bit of a mix of both? I mean, how do you see the line sort of figuring? Does it really matter whether you're one of either?
No, I don't think it is. If you think that all the IT pros now, if we stand a chance in this world, we need to learn a little bit of coding. We need to know PowerShell. And if you don't know PowerShell, that is going to be pretty bad in future. So, yeah, I don't think it's a conference just for developers. The opposite, I think it's a conference for everyone, more for IT pros, because we need to learn a lot, and we need to start learning coding.
Okay, so as we're heading towards our roundup, is there anything we haven't covered about your sessions, or that you'd like to point out, or let people know, or encourage them, or something we've missed out on?
No, I'm just going to, again, ask people to come to the session and to ask questions. Point out All what right. they want to do with OMS. That would be great.
Okay. All right. So how can people get in touch with you if they need to before the event or during the event, or if they want to catch up? What's the best way sure. for them to get in contact with you?
Just reach out to my Twitter handle, Cloud Tidings. That's the easy one.
Okay, we'll make sure that is in the show notes along with some other links about the OMS and the Linux product on Azure. And I'll take this opportunity to thank Alessandro for his time. I know he's very busy running around getting all this sort of stuff ready for customers and answering all their very difficult questions. So again, thank you very much for coming on and making time, Alessandro.
Thank you, Robert.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact. This podcast is voiced and produced by me, Mark Keane.